Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back with you this Thursday evening with LA Talk Radio's very own Writer's Block. I am your hostess with the leastest, Jim Christina, and I am here with my friends and co-hosts, Miss Bobby Jean Bell in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello, hello, hello. And Mr. Richard Polinelli in Fruta, Idaho. Oh, oh, Colorado.
Oh, those fighting words around here.
Never mind. And we have a pretty good show for line four. You know, we have a guest that about, you know, every 6 months she's on the show, whether she needs to be or not. And she's just one of those, she's just hangers on. So we love her to death, and we definitely love her books. So she's going to be joining us. Well, actually, she'll be joining us in just a few minutes. And right now we have a call in from Mr. J.R. Sanders in Riverside, California. And don't forget Richard.
Yeah.
and Richard, I'm sorry.
I'll just float out here in my outer space background and be ignored. That's fine.
That's the trouble with being on the phone and not being Skype.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know if you remember, but when the last time we were at the Cowboy Festival all together, we had a deal with Johnny Boggs. You remember that deal about Stephen King?
Stephen King.
When I paid that kid to go up there and ask him if he was Stephen King?
Yeah. Asked him to sign a copy of The Shining?
I did. Well, Johnny flipped me off, but that's okay.
Good time.
he knew who it was. So anyway, this is our writer's corner is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. And if you're looking to have a book published or first time author, give us a holler. You'll find us on the web, www.tuscanybaybooks.com, and everything you'll need is right there on our website. And we're open for questions. So anybody that has a question for any of the writers here, or actually the non-writers, as she sits there smiling, please feel free to ask. Anybody want to start?
I do. Hey, JR, I hear you've got a book coming out this week. Tell us what's going on.
I do. 1 week from today, it's the second of my Nate Ross Private Eye series. It's called Dead Bang Fall.
Some of the characters from the first book going to show up in book two?
Oh, yeah. Nate, the main character, and his cowboy sidekick, Dusty, take to the streets again.
And remind us kind of what year and where these take place.
Takes place in the 30s. The first book was 38. This book is 1939. And it's set in the seamy streets of Los Angeles.
Oh, in 1939, they were seamy streets, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You think they're bad now.
Oh, they were horrible back then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Wilshire Boulevard in 1939 was nothing but a dirt road.
No, just a few billboards.
Exactly. So I don't remember because that's 10 years pre-Jim. But
not to put you on the spot, I'll just ask one more question. What is the opening line? What's the opening sentence, JR?
The opening sentence? Well, I actually have a copy of the book right here.
Of course you do.
Of course I've already. the opening sentence doesn't give you a whole lot. It just says, I tumbled to their game right away.
Ooh.
There you go. Like it.
Peggy, what do you think of that sentence?
I like it. I love a good first sentence. Speaking of Stephen King, and I've read all of the Dark Tower series, and he started off with the gunslinger raced across the desert and followed by the dark man.
Yeah.
Now know what's going on in the book. And that sounds good for the one we just talked about. I mean, it tells you that you fell for it, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, I think we all would agree that if you get through the first paragraph, first page, first couple pages, you're hooked, if you like it.
Yeah.
Usually the case.
Yeah, and if you don't, then it becomes a chore going past that point. But yeah, for us, I mean, it's not a chore, it's just a job.
For a reader, yes, absolutely. You got to get us hooked, right, exactly. Richard? You got to get us hooked.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I usually give a book till the end of the second chapter. But there are some books that don't make it to the end of the first. So yeah, you've got to make sure the reader's giving them a reason to keep turning the page. And I've read a couple of books where two pages in, it's like, I'm not going to finish this one. So it's really important.
Not one of
you can usually tell in those first couple of pages. You can usually tell.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we've all read ones that we put down and said, well, that was a futile effort.
Yep.
But I mean, most books, because we read them for a different reason here. We don't read them for entertainment value more than we do for stories and, you know, how the writer writes. And so, yeah. I mean, it's a different thing here. But Peggy, I'm going to put you on the spot because I starting with The Secrets of Sandhill Island.
Yeah.
I absolutely love all of your books. The ones that I've read that you've been on the show. This is your fifth visit, incidentally, if you didn't know that. Fifth. Yeah. All of the books that you've provided us to read have been phenomenal. I mean, even your YA novels, Glen Valley and Return to Glen Valley, I love those stories. I absolutely love them. You know, I love the fantasy medieval stuff, you know, and the trolls and the leprechauns and the... the whatever, but I loved all of that, and then going back to Sandhill Island, of course, and then all your other, and now you're into like pulp fiction and comic books.
It's my second pulp fiction, and I can't seem to decide what genre to write, so
apparently not. We'll get into that in just a minute, JR, you got a question for anybody here on the dial?
I love pulp fiction myself, so I'm going to have to add to my reading stack here.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've had Gary, what was his name, Gary?
Philip? No.
He's been on a couple, two, three times.
Yes, too. Really well-known
Well-known pulp fiction writer. Huh. Oh, my gosh.
I know, it'll come to us as soon as we're off the air, you know.
I know. In fact, I ran into one of his friends at an airport in Houston, of all places. And he was a cowboy. Hmm. And he goes, yeah, I know Gary. You do?
Funny. Funny.
Yeah. It's kind of a small community. I think pulp fiction is kind of it's a niche, you know. It's
not it definitely is, for sure. For sure, and I you really have to have a touch to be able to write correctly. And about where do you get the ideas for? And he goes, from 1940s, 1950s, early 60s. You know, that's where it all comes from.
Right.
I have a question.
Oh no.
Okay, so everybody on has written a series.
Yes.
And so maybe if you could each just talk a little bit about how did you know. Did you know it would be a series before you wrote book one, or did it call you to be a series as you were completing it? The first.
Richard, start with you, Rich.
The first book I wrote was intended to be a series because that's how I sold it to the publisher. It was going to be supposed to be four, but we shrunk it down to three. I went into that one setting things up in the first book for what was coming. I've had a book that I'll make a series out of it if you'll just leave me alone for 5 seconds. So it's a different approach I found when you're going to do a series because you want to kind of lay it out and then make sure you're dropping the breadcrumbs as you go at a good pace as opposed to a standalone. I'm just going to get this thing done and get it over with and move on. So yeah, it's. You almost have to make it work. I got away with it in the one that wasn't supposed to be a series because I just happened to leave myself a nice little back door.
Yeah, my first one I wrote, actually the first two I wrote at the same time. So I knew that was going to be at least a two book series. But it just kept expanding. And then I got to where I was doing them three books at a shot, not all at the same time, but each one, you know, they relate to each other in the three book series. But there's mentions going back to the first one. There's mentions going up to the 12th one, you know. So, but I found writing the series, and I'm sure Richard and JR, I know you found this, is that it's really hard to keep your characters fresh.
Yeah, it is. And my case was actually the exact opposite. The first book that I wrote about Nate Ross, this PI in Los Angeles, was intended to just be a one-off, because it was kind of a weird hybrid of a private eye story and a Western. And I never intended to write another one, but the publisher that I approached, can I plug my publisher?
Yes.
Oh, Level Best Books. They're publishing some of the coolest mystery and crime fiction out there. But when I approached them with the first book, they liked the character and the setting so well that they gave me a contract for it on that. And so Dead Bang Fall is the second of those, and I'm at work currently on the third one. And it's been kind of neat, because I gave this character some backstory in the first book that I really didn't have enough space or time to go into fully. And so the second book goes a little deeper into his history and his backstory, and the third book is going to continue that.
Sure. I wound up having to do a separate book on just the main character, starting from when he first started his job as a manhunter all the way up to his death. And it was like, people kept saying, well, how did this guy get this role? How did he start this job? How did he, you know, what started him in this? So I went back and I had to create this entire backstory. The guy who trained him, Arkansas Frank Mallon, and the guy, his first guy he killed, California, it's like, wow, you know, and then you have to keep going. And I found that not only keeping my character fresh, but keeping their dialogue fresh. And also, because you have to kill people off in books, and series are wonderful platforms for getting rid of characters, as we all know. And figuring out which character now has outrun his usefulness.
And it's tough.
It is. It's hard.
Rose has threatened to divorce me if I ever even contemplate killing off Dusty Banner. So I think Dusty's going to be there for the long run.
Well, there you go.
Because I'd like to stay married.
You know, the first phone call I got when I killed off Jolly Goodman was from my sister-in-law. You killed off my favorite character. No, I didn't. The ghost did. I didn't. You know.
Well, see, in my Del Rio series, there's three books. There's only two characters that are still. So that's kind of my solution, is you keep getting rid
killing
of
them
bring some new people in and get rid of them.
But I like it.
Bobby knows the one character I've caught the most grief over killing off. It was in Reservations. Yeah.
Oh.
I still to this day get people going, why did you have to do that? It's like, it's part of the series. It's got to gotta happen.
Well, Peggy, go ahead, JR.
For the most part, I've only killed off people so far that nobody liked really anyway. So I haven't caught too much flack yet.
Well, Peggy, we'll be talking about the second in the Keystone Lake series with you tonight. But do you want to jump in here and talk a little bit about that? Writing a series,
Peggy?
And characters.
No, not yet. Not yet.
Well,
not yet.
Well,
not
she
yet.
Can talk about it generally speaking.
So I have two different types of series. And I know Richard talked about this once before. In the Sandhill Island series, the main character is the island.
Right.
And all the stories revolve around the people who are on that island. And then in the Keystone Lake series, my main character is Erin, and she comes back in the second book. And I haven't killed anybody off yet. I've thought about one in Sandhill Island that might need to go. But Bobby Jean, I've got to tell you, I love your background with the dam.
I'm there. I'm in Oklahoma, and it's just, you know, right there.
Oh my God. Okay, question for real quick for Richard, for JR, for Peggy, and for myself. Who's best you ever wrote? Start with Richard.
Last Lonely Trail.
Which one?
You know which one I'm talking about.
You're talking about The Sign?
The Sign, yeah.
That was a good one. That was a good one. JR, what about you?
It would be, I guess, in the new book, and I guess it's not too much of a spoiler, but Nate Ross finds himself in a position where he's working without his trusty sidearm, and so he ends up dispatching one of the bad guys by shoving a fork into his throat.
Ooh, I like it. Peggy, what about you? Detective.
I don't know why I'm wincing, because in the first Hill Island, the very first page, a man gets a meat hook in his chest.
Right.
Thrown over the boat. So that was pretty good, I thought.
Yeah.
It kept us reading.
Yeah, it did. I think mine was on my book, Striker, when he was chasing the ghost, and he finally caught up with him at the end of the book, and the ghost is asleep. He's drunk and passed out against his fence on this corral. And Striker walks up to him, and he's got this Colt in his hand, and he starts pulling the hammer back. One, two, three, four. And each click, the ghost is remembering things from his past that are coming into his dreams until the explosion goes off. And then he realizes that he's been shot. And he looks down, and he can't breathe, and he's looking at Striker, and he thought he'd killed Striker, and he goes, "I thought you were dead." He said, "Nope." But you are. Anyway, I'm doing my best. Okay, guys, we're going to have to call this. Hey, thanks, JR, for coming in and chatting with us.
Sure. Thank you. Pleasure.
Get a hold of the bookie and get booked on the show, my buddy.
Yeah, already done.
Okay,
I can't think of the date, but we're set up.
Okay, then, JR. J.R. Sanders, and he joined us tonight. Thank you so much, J.R., for your willingness to come on into the madness. We'll be right back with you after a brief word from Tuscany Bay Books.
You say you've written the end on a book that makes Rowlings look like Jack and Jill went up the hill, that makes Tolkien's look like a trip to the store, and finishes a series better than George R.R. Martin? But you don't know how to get your book into the hands of readers?
No!
Well, look, before you throw that manuscript in the trash and set Warp 10 for Get Me the Hell Out of Here, go to TuscanyBayBooks.com, click on the Submissions tab, tell us all about your book, and we'll get back in touch with you, and we'll help you get that thing formatted, edited, get a great book cover for it, get it out there so that you can do the most important thing. Write your next book. That's TuscanyBayBooks.com. Go there today.
And we are back. And it is now 16 minutes past the hour of 6 o'clock on the Pacific Coast. And we are in the studio with our guest tonight, Miss Peggy Chambers, directly from Enid, Oklahoma. And she's sitting there with a smirk on her face. So I know she's ready to say something. And her latest book, and I'm going to let her tell you about it because it was interesting read, and I didn't read the first one, but I definitely read the second one. And let's have Peggy tell you a little bit about it. Please welcome back for her fifth visit to the Writer's Block, Miss Peggy Chambers. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. Thank you. I didn't realize it had been five times.
It has been.
I just been having so much fun.
Well, and we welcome you anytime.
Thank you. Well, we'll start off with one in the fall, Flatiron.
Let's start with that one, and we'll move on to your I want to say Blaupunkt, but it's not Blaupunkt. I don't know what it is. Anyway.
This one is Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
I met the publishers for Airship 27 at a conference several years ago, and they've published two of my books now. Flatiron Death Grip is, it has two different artists that help out with that and will make it look great. Ted Hammonds is Canadian artist that did the cover, and Gabriella Senez, she goes by Gabs, is a young girl in high school that did the internal illustrations, and she is a ball of fire. They both are. I like to write pulp fiction. It's just kind of fun. I had four short stories And I decided I wanted to try to put these four short stories into one novel, all these super, give them a goal, a main goal. Four different stories going four different directions. What's their main goal? And they discovered a treasure in the basement of an abandoned subway tunnel. Well, it really didn't seem like much of a treasure, but it had been called a treasure, but it turned out to be a plant. It was alive down in the basement, and there was no reason for it to be alive. There was no water, there was no light, but the plant was alive. And so they all end up trying to protect this plant and take it out into the world, and it clears up all of the pollution and such that's in the air. But lots of different characters. It's definitely a character-driven story. I have a werewolf, good werewolves and bad werewolves. And I have a zombie lawyer because I have some friends that fit that position as a zombie lawyer. And then I've got a vampire who really doesn't want to be there. He's a capitalist. He just wants to make money. But it was a lot of fun to put it together. I had a lot of fun with it. I had a little sprite. She's a fairy, and she's addicted to gasoline fumes. So she hangs out at the gas station all the time and gets into trouble. It was a lot of fun to write.
I'll bet. I bet. Yeah, and I love me some vampires. I love vampire stories.
Well, this vampire has made fake human blood. And so he's no longer chasing people in dark alleys. He's producing this and selling it on the market and making a buck.
Wow. I like it.
Well,
I did not read this one. I read the book, so.
Okay.
Some of what was so interesting to me is as the story unfolds, we begin to realize, because some of these characters go into the police station where they get arrested, and they're not, I mean, like they're werewolves and they're still in wolf form. And so you are also making some comments kind of about civil rights, that all of these characters that are non-people characters have kind of a lot of the same rights and such that humans have. It's a really interesting world you've created.
Well, in the world, I said that the Civil Rights Amendment had been amended again. And this time it had to include all types of life forms, like zombies, lawyers, not lawyers. Lawyers are a life form to begin with. But anyway, bears, et cetera, they all have to, and they can't figure out how to get the handcuffs to work on a wolf. They have to treat them with respect.
Mm-hmm.
So they're arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it was a lot of fun. I had my main character is Teezy. Teezy is a hairdresser, and she is out to try to clean up her neighborhood. And she has a costume. She's got a hood that she pulls down over her head, and she's got this favorite T-shirt that she dearly loves when she goes out, and it says FU on the front of it, which stands for Flatiron University, where she really wanted to go to school, but couldn't. But she wants people to think she went to school.
Gotcha. Richard, you got anything?
Well, I read the other book, so.
Yeah, me too.
I'm just kind of sitting here listening about this one. Yeah, it almost opposed to Pulp Fiction. Have you considered marketing it differently with it being urban fantasy, or do you want to strictly stay with Pulp Fiction?
Well, no, I think that, yeah, it probably would go into that category. One of the things we're doing right now, because the artist wanted to do it, we're turning this into a graphic novel.
Mm.
So working on that, quite a chore. Converting a whole novel to, you know, a script.
And yeah.
So I've been working on that. But yeah, it is kind of an urban fantasy. You're right.
Okay. I was just curious because you started bringing in vampires and werewolves. I'm like, well, no, wait. That seems to be more than that. Now, I kind of want, if we can, I want to jump in on this graphic novel idea, because who brought the idea up? Was that something you wanted to do, or is it somebody else?
It was the artist that came and said, I keep thinking about these characters, and I just really want to do a graphic novel. So she talked to the publisher, and he said, sure, let's do it. So that's what we're working on right now.
That seems to be something that's kind of catching on. You know, several people I'm connected with are starting to do graphic novels as opposed to writing regular novels. They're doing these Kickstarters, and you see, you know, nothing like Brandon Sanderson the other day when he dropped his out there, and it's in the $30 million range right now. But, you know, I've seen some that are like 100,000, 200,000 for graphic novels. So it seems to be a market that's worth exploring.
It is. I went down to the library when I first started this idea, and I said, load me up. I want to see a lot of different ones and what they're doing and that sort of thing. Liberta, she sent me home with a big load, but I was looking at Neil Gaiman's work, and of course he's, you know, top of the line with fantasy right now, and he does novels as well as graphic novels and movies.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit about Blooming Greed. What a great story. And I noticed Bobby Jean sitting in front of the crumbling dike over there.
Actually, it looks like it's in pretty good condition here.
Yeah, I love the comment about, do you know how old this dam is? And there's a hole in this dike. And where do you put your finger?
Yeah.
You know, what a visual. And you know, I have to say that I had never actually, I had to look them up because I had never heard of zebra mussels before.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
My husband and I have had a place at Keystone Lake for years, and zebra mussels go from lake to lake because they move around.
Yeah, they hitchhike.
They do hitchhike, and they'll ruin a motor on a boat. They will ruin a dam. They can stay outside of the water for several days, just hanging
out. Yeah, I was looking at pictures, and there is like these big balls of just zebra mussels attached to each other.
Yeah.
And then there was a crank on some kind of a boat pulley thing that was just covered in zebra mussels, and they couldn't even use it anymore.
Yeah, like the idea of barnacles, sort of.
And how do you get them off? I mean, I don't know. But anyway.
I don't know.
To the book. To Erin, who happens to be a great chick, incidentally.
She's come a long way. She's growing up.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that always has amazed me about your characterizations and your characters in your books, and I will say this and then I'm going to shut up, is that you've always made them human and you've always made them real. And you've always not cluttered the story with extemporaneous people that pop in and out. You pick your characters carefully. I don't know if you do it on purpose, but that seems to be what you're doing. And I really like that in that you don't have to remember all these names of all these people, you know, that, and they had to refer back to chapter 3 to remember who this guy was. And, you know, so kudos.
Thank you. Well, I've learned a little bit about that. That's way too many characters. Couldn't somebody else do that? You know, get rid of that.
We're working on a guy's book right now that he'd done exactly that. Oh, my God. Yeah. And everybody has a backstory. He's one yeoman that walks into a spaceship, you know, bridge, and he has an entire backstory in the back of the book. No.
No. That's not good.
So we've cleaned that up. I know, Richard, you have a question or two about Blooming Greed.
Well, I mine is more from a writer standpoint because I catch myself reading as a writer instead of a reader anymore. I wanted to ask you, you kind of introduce who the bad guy is pretty early on. We kind of figure out who it is. Was that intentional or is it just the way it worked out?
Well, it wasn't Agatha Christie. You know, I wasn't dropping clues as to who it was because I thought you should know from the beginning. But I don't think anybody knew how bad he really was going to be till towards the end.
Yeah.
You know, at first he was just swindling people out of their land, but it did get worse. So.
But I do like the way you wrap things up with him, without doing spoilers. That's all I can do. I like.
Yeah, and I love the fact that they're selling underwater property. Oh my God, and you know what? That reminded me so much when I read that part of the Bible. I'm thinking, holy crap! I just watched something on the news where they're selling digital property. It's not real.
People are buying these huge plots of land and paying millions of dollars, and it's not real land.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't get it, but I suppose I'm not supposed to.
Well, I have seen Keystone Lake so flooded that people are waking out in the parking lot, you know.
Yes.
So that does happen, but we know it goes down, and pretty soon you've got your peninsula or your island turns into a peninsula. You know, I've seen it a lot. The rates, the levels go up and down and up and down. But yes, ma'am.
Bobby. Oh, I see somebody who has a hand up.
Peggy, it was such a fun read, but readers listening, if you have it, you read this one, you need to read the first one too, because the characters are wonderful. What I guess I, it's a little bit romance. It's a little bit mystery. I had a feeling that you really love these characters, and I'm assuming that you kind of launch them and they go off on their own and they let you know what they want to do or not want to do. I really enjoyed watching the relationship develop again between Aaron and Chris. I thought that was a really special, you know, piece to the book. And I wondered if this is a, since this is a series and they all so far have blooming in the first word of the title, what are you working on next?
I have kind of started the third one. I really like that does all the designs. She's a little bit out there. And
She's quirky.
Bernadette will probably play a major part in the third one, and I'm tentatively calling it Blooming Dawn so that it's a little less depressing than greed and all that sort of thing. But I don't know for sure. I know she's about to become a new mother, and she's been trying to her new business with
fashion line,
fashion and such. And I liked her in the first book when she was kidnapped and managed to get out of the ropes in the, So
yeah.
She's fun, I think.
And we're going to hold it right there, Peggy. Don't go away. As always, you're just fascinating to talk to. And we'll be back with you right after this short word from LA Talk Radio.
If you have never listened to LA Talk Radio, then you need to treat yourself to one of the best online live radio stations around. If you have listened to talk radio and, let's be honest, found yourself saying, I can do that better, well then, LA Talk Radio wants you. See, we have 50-minute slots available all day, Saturdays and Sundays included, and we are looking to fill those slots with high-quality broadcasts from talk hosts that are in the know. If you think you have what it takes, go to www.latalkradio.com and click the link that says Become a Host. Then just follow the simple instructions. Before you know it, you'll be joining the legion of radio folks that got their start right here at LA Talk Radio. That's www.latalkradio.com. You have something to say now, right?
LA Talk with our guest, Ms. Peggy Chambers. It is now 6:32 and Pacific time. And if you want to call and talk to Peggy, you can. The number is 323-203-0815. Write that down. Put it on your forehead. 323-203-0815. And you can talk directly to Miss Peggy Chambers right there in Edith, Oklahoma. And, of course, you can talk to me and Richard and Bobby Jean, too, although I don't know why you'd want to. Okay, moving on. Bobby, shall we ask a little bit of process?
Oh, sure.
And actually, well, you made a comment a few minutes ago, Peggy, and I wanted to say something, but I kept my mouth shut, but I can't do it any longer. When you said, Bobby said, yeah, it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I was thinking, yeah, a little bit of country, a little bit of rock and roll. Get into the process here, kid. Oh, come on.
With 7 years. I guess I'll leap to the rescue here. But we kind of touched on it a little bit with JR as far as the approach to a series. I guess how do you decide what project you're going to work on? Is it going to be a series? And if it is, you know, how much work do you do leading up to the moment when you sit down and write the first word of the first chapter of the very first book?
That's a very good question.
I really like my series to still be standalone. Like Bobby Jean said, I think it's important not just to leave somebody hanging. Those books are very irritating to me. I mean, I have read 7, 8, you know, Outlander or Stephen King or something like that. And they do leave you hanging and you wonder what's going to happen next. But I like for mine to be standalone. But yet, if you find that you fall in love with a character, then they're back next time. And to me, that's the way I like to write it.
Yeah, it's almost like you tidy up the end of the story, but you leave it open for another story.
For another story, right.
Right. Gotcha.
And that's an important point. That's an important point. You can do a series, and each book can stand on its own within the series, and you can still weave in elements as you go to kind of lay the groundwork. Say if you're in book two, you're laying something down that's going to pop up in book four. You can do that and still end each book. So if somebody just reads book two out of the blue, they don't really need to have read any of the others. So that's a juggling act that's not that easy to pull off.
No, it's not.
But me, I read normally plenty. I dearly love the Outlander series, and I've read all of them. And I've watched the movies and such, but they do go on and on and on. Sometimes
they do.
Let's just get to the story. You know?
They do. And the series has gone on and on and on and almost too long now.
Probably. You know, Harry Potter is another example. So
there's another one. Yeah. I mean, Harry Potter is now, what, 52 years old? And
I imagine so. Grandfather.
I always tried to in my series, and I don't know how in the hell I wound up with 12 books in a series, but I always tried to put the end in an epilogue, so you knew where the ending was, and you knew what happened right after the action stops. But it does lay the groundwork for another, if you want to put it in, which is nice. I mean, you know, your series can end on book three, it can end on book five, you know. Or never.
And you know, I mean, let's be serious. If you're making money off of it, don't end it.
Yeah, don't quit. Yeah.
Don't quit.
But, well, look at John Sanford. He's into what, book 32 of his Prey series?
Oh no.
And he's still going strong. In fact, when we interviewed him, we had his newest book. It was great. His stuff never gets stale.
If it doesn't get old, then yeah.
Keep going. And okay, another question I have to ask you on process is, when is it that you have time and when is it that you like to sit down and write?
I am retired these days, so I have a lot more time on my hands.
Okay.
But I do like to in the afternoons, gotta work afternoon. I spent this morning, I say I did, my husband and I spent this morning. He had rotator cuff surgery. So I took my computer because I was sitting in the waiting room. You know, and it was 6 o'clock in the morning, so I needed to stay busy. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kept my mind off of it and got some work done and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, Richard and I write when we can. I reserve the early mornings for reading next week's book. Because I'm usually up around 3:30. So before Jerry gets up and the dog gets up, I get a couple, 3-4 hours of reading time in so I can finish the books. But my writing, we have a hard time because as soon as that's finished, shower and breakfast, the last 3 days I've been doing manuscripts for other people. And that's time consuming, especially when you have to edit the entire book.
It is very time consuming.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very time consuming, and then you have to write the email from hell saying no, you can't do this, you got to stop doing this. You know, here's the book back. You may want to look at your last 4 chapters.
Yeah.
You know,
I've got a great editor in Edmond, Oklahoma, and Allie just got. She's so kind. Did you change tenses? She was saying.
Oh, we're nice. We just, you know, we just make suggestions. And if you don't want to follow them, it's your book.
Yeah.
pretty much it. So, but I'm going to ask you the question early because we have another segment coming up here in 5 minutes. And occasionally, because we all do, even though we don't want to admit it, Richard. So what do you do when you do get it, and how do you get out of it?
I think the best thing you can do is keep writing. Write something, even though it's garbage. And later on, you'll go back and either delete it or fix it. Because if you stop and wait for inspiration, you're just not going to get it.
Right.
And a lot of times, that's when I do research. And I did a lot of research on the dam for Keystone Lake. And I'm sure Homeland Security, if they looked at my, browsing history, how do you blow up a dam? But I contacted the Corps of Engineers and sent them an email. I wanted to tour the dam. Well, it was the middle of a pandemic. We weren't going to be touring the dam. But I talked back and forth with a young man that was the intake valves on the back side of the dam, the lake side of the dam. There are four of them, and they are 27 feet across. I mean, how many... I had my divers go down and check out the intake to see if they were clogged up with zebra mussels. I kept thinking, 27 feet. How many divers is that across? You know, that's vast.
I can't imagine nine.
Yeah. In flipper or something. And Keystone Lake is not a nice clear lake. It's a muddy lake. So, I'm sure diving in Keystone Lake wouldn't be fun.
Hey, you know, when the Army Corps of Engineers build a dam or earthenware, anything, jetty or whatever, they know how to blow it up.
Well,
they know exactly what to give it in a hurry, Gene. They know where the weak points are and where to put the explosive to get rid of that dam right now.
Well, I was trying to do mine by natural causes.
Well, they're not going to tell you. They're not going to tell you how to do it, unfortunately. But
you know, the best example of blowing up a dam in a movie was Force 10 from Navarone,
where the guy
has a small little package of dynamite, big dam they're going to blow up, and he tells him put it down in his bottom part there. It goes. It doesn't even kill the two guys who are nearby, and they're like, "Well, he screwed this up." And he goes, "Just wait." And like 10 minutes later, all the water pressure hits that weak point and off it goes. So I thought that was just whoever came up with that. And I'm sure they checked it out to make sure it would work. That is some great research to find a unique way to take something out.
Great movie.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, it is. Both the Navarone movies are good. Okay, Bobby, you got a question.
I do.
We're going to be getting into the readers section here in just a minute. So.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Okay, now I'm tongue-tied. I'm sorry. As a reader, I really enjoy descriptions. You give fabulous ones. You mentioned a bit ago about in Flatiron, the little sprite that is in love with gasoline. I had never thought about how gasoline could be so absolutely transformative. And in this book, there's all kinds of descriptions. You've just touched on one that the dam 27 feet, those big, you know, you write that really, really well. And I just wondered, two writers out there, how would you encourage them to really think about a scene and describe it in a way?
Well, first of all, if it's something like a dam, I want to make sure that I kind of know what I'm talking about, because I don't want someone out there to say, you know nothing about dams. That is not going to work, you know. So I do a lot of research. But when it comes to fantasy, like the little sprite that's addicted to gasoline, I was trying to fill my gas tank one night, and this moth kept trying to fly down the sun. And that's where the idea came from. I kept thinking, is something wrong with this guy? Has he been breathing the fumes too much? But I do like to try to do research, and also I have an imagination that I might as well do something with.
Well, I think if you're going to come up with something that you want to make work in a book, mm-hmm. you come up with the idea and then you research ways. Will it work? How will it work? Was it the last LL? What is that? Oh, Last Lonely Trail.
Yeah.
With the sign, with the sign. They got this guy handcuffed and he's galloping through town. He didn't want to gallop through town, but they needed to get rid of him. So they spotted his horse and he went galloping through town and they took a shot at him, but he hit an old sign. And the sign was so old, it split apart and came ripping down like an axe and hit him right in the back of the head and cut his head off.
Mm-hmm. That's
and we figured that would really, that could happen.
Yeah.
So we left it in the book. And it was one of Richard's friends actually that got killed. So we killed off almost all of his friends in that book.
Hey, I told them going into this, when I called for volunteers to volunteer your name to be in the book, it was going to be 9 bad guys and you all were going to die by the end of this book. So, and I wasn't going to be nice on you when you died either. And they're like, sure, go for it. So,
yeah. And well, we did.
Well, we did.
We did. We killed them in really good ways. Huh? We did. Hang tough just a second there, Peggy, and the rest of the crew. We'll be back with you. And right now, you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and we'll be right back with you after this word from Creative Edge Publicity.
Okay, you've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcast, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your work and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity.
And we are back, and a few minutes we have left. Peggy, I'm going to ask you a question. When you're writing your book, what do you expect your readers to get out of it?
Well, I hope they're entertained. I also hope that the suspense novels will be suspenseful enough to keep you on the edge of the seat, like the sign falling down and cutting somebody's head off.
Yeah.
But mostly, you know, I write them because I've got all these ideas in my head and I got to do something with them. And you're all writers and you understand that. Those stories got to go somewhere. But I just hope that people will like them as much as I do. That's what I hope they get out of it.
Okay. And Richard?
Yeah, I mean, I just hope that by the time they've gotten to the end of the story, they had as much fun reading it as I did writing it. And that's really... Yeah. That's really all I'm shooting for. I don't try to do message fiction, so you know I'm just trying to tell a story and entertain. That's it.
Yeah. I think here too, and I think back to that scene with the guy getting his head cut off, and I think one of the most fun parts and one I was hoping the readers were going to get part of that was the fact that these two men. This marshal and this Texas Ranger, they're not bonding. They're actually adversaries, but they find themselves on the same quest. And they're sitting there arguing what they're going to do with this guy. They've got him handcuffed on a horse, and the Texas Ranger says, "Well, you know, we're going to have to drag his ugly carcass all the way across, you know, New Mexico and stuff to get him back." And the marshal looks, he escaped. Texas Ranger says, "Yeah." He escaped. So off they send him. And the rest, of course, is, as they say, history. But we wanted to show the begrudging respect these two had for each other. And that was a fun part. And I wanted the readers really to get that more than anything in that particular book. So, Bobby, and as a reader, what do you look for?
As a reader, I want to be engaged and I want to feel that, especially if I've spent money or time, that was worth my investment.
Sure.
The last, I don't know how many pages, Peggy, of this book, the last 50, the last 40, I hardly took a breath. And I stayed up way too late because I just had to keep turning the pages. it had a wonderful pace and was moving right along and things were being revealed. And then you take us on a ride. And I like that. I enjoy that with books whose pacing, you know, you go to a certain point and then something really happens and then you're excited to be able to breathe again and something happens. And that's something that I look for as a reader.
Yeah, we're out of time. And I have to tell you though, Bobby, the last time when we lost you that one with
when I just my computer died with
he had mentioned something about an encounter with somebody and I said, well, I've had an encounter with Bobby Jean a few times, but Jim's always been present, so. It was a great line, and I had to throw it away. It wasn't worth anything. Okay, Peggy Chambers, again, we have gone through just a magical hour, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We love having you, and you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you very much. You're
more than welcome. You're just one of our favorite guests. And next week, we have a writer from Creative Edge, Nicole Fanning. This is her first book. We'll see how that goes. Right now, it's an interesting format to say the least. I did look into it, Rich, and it has been reformatted. So, but it's still 460 some pages.
I'll be reading.
What are you gonna do? I like Peggy's books. They're short and fast.
Yeah.
If you can read it on an airplane from L.A. to New York, made your money. You're, of course, again, welcome to come back anytime. We love having you. For Richard, what are you working on right now, Rich, real quick?
I am trying to get the final edits done on Galen's Blade, and then I'm actually looking at following Peggy into the graphic novel world. So I've got an idea. I'm trying to reach out to some people, see if they want to give it a shot, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, and I have nothing on my plate right at the moment. I finished off everything. I'm sure I'll have stuff back within the next 3 or 4 days, rewrites, et cetera. But right now I am free and clear, so I'll be diving into Fanning, and we'll see how that goes. And I'm working on my own for a change instead of on someone else's. So there you have it. And Bobby, I know you're always busy, so...
JR just texted he is scheduled June 23rd.
Okay, well then we'll look forward to having JR with us. And for myself, for Bobby Jean Bell, Jim Bell, of course, Mr. Bobby Jean, Richard Paulinelli, our engineer Sam Hassan, and of course the bookie, without whom none of this would be possible. We are out of here. Don't go away.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Paulinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.